Okay, Jiva Goswami concludes his analysis of the present Anucheda, page 30, by restating its original thesis. We intend to demonstrate that logic cannot approach the absolute truth on the grounds that such truth is inconceivable. And in fact, we have already explained this by citing statements such as, quote, certainly things that are inconceivable cannot be reduced to logical explanation. Achintya kalau ye bhava na tams tarkena yojayik. If logic finds scope in matters conceivable, let it. We are not concerned with that. The Vedas alone are in all regards the final authority, as stated also in the Vedanta commentary of Shankara. Quote, it is on the strength of the scripture that a spiritual philosopher delineates the true nature of causes and other principles. We need not accept everything exactly as seen through logic. Sharir Gavasya of Shankara 2238. Right, so in other words, how you're seeing it or how you're perceiving that, that's not necessarily the important position to take. Right? Because otherwise then, you know, so many things could be done with this. Then it makes the anuman, the perception the primary. Right, but it has to be Shastra. So his point is, that's not actually how we accept. Right, we should be able to accept before it's seen. Right, so unless it's, the problem is if I'll only accept it when I can see it. The problem is with transcendental, only through the Lord's mercy do you get the ability to see. And if you haven't accepted it, how will you see? So it won't happen. Therefore, through logic, it can't happen. Right, it has to be through the Lord's mercy, because you're dealing with what's inconceivable. Right, if it, what, why call it inconceivable if you can conceive of it? Right, so here is that. Therefore, it's based on Scripture that you define everything, not based on what you're able to perceive. Because then, from the mundane, you can only see mundane things. Right, but if it's based on Shastra, which is dealing with transcendental, then with that faith and understanding, then one can see things that are unseen. Right? Yes. Thus, the Vedas, we conclude, are the super mundane verbal source of knowledge, and whatever they ultimately establish as true must be inconceivable because it is super mundane. Inasmuch as that truth is what we should investigate, the object of our worship should be that which in the Vedas, by beginning, and at the other sides, we discover to be superior to all else. Okay. So, what is that beginning? You know, what is behind? That is what we should be investigating. Right? So it's not an popular topic, but the point is it has to go back, which is superior to all else. So that means also from what you can see, everything like that, it has to be beyond. Therefore, the scientists trying to find their answers within what they can see. In other words, if they can't see it, they won't believe it. right? Mm-hmm. Like that, you know? Try a baseball bat in the back of their head. They never saw that coming. But, you know, one would be wise to believe it.
Subtle.
Right?
Yeah.
So the point is, you know, they may say, no, but someone else can see it. Yes, but he's qualified to see. You're not qualified to see. You don't have eyes in the back of your head. Right? And if you do, you're weird. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, the point is there are those who are transcendental. They are able to see the absolute truth. So you have to hear from them, because you didn't see it. Right? So much of what the scientists do, they're working on knowledge that they haven't seen. Right? Somebody sits in a lab for 10 years with a white rat, how many people have seen that? Right? One or two others might take it to confirm it, if it's so necessary for their work. But otherwise, they're not. They're basing it that this person is authorized, they said it, so therefore. So you're hearing from authority, so why not hear from transcendental? Right? So there's no such thing as, well, if you can't see it. So yes, we're also saying the same thing. But the point is you can't see spiritual with mundane vision. Right? So those with spiritual vision, they can see spirit. Right?
And the method is given of how to.
Yes, and the method is given. That you approach authorities by their grace, you apply what they think, and then by Krishna's grace, you'll understand. The word achintya literally means inconceivable, yet as used by the Acharyas in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it describes the supreme truth not as altogether impossible to understand, but rather not understandable by any material means. Vedic scripture is the one means by which to conceive of the inconceivable. Right? That means that, as pointed out before, there is no. The Vedas alone are in all regards the final authority. So that means for us also. Because what is there, the Acharya shown where it is in the Veda. Like that. We're not doing our own thing and saying, oh, we don't care for the Veda. They're saying, no, it can all be proved there. But the point is, since it's inconceivable, then only by the Lord's grace you can actually really appreciate that. The signs mentioned in this text are the six signs discussed above: beginning, upakrama, and conclusion, upasamhara, repetition, abhyasa, the fact of being unknown before, apurvata, the fruit of purpose, phalam, glorification, artavad, and logical support, upapati. In the next, right? So it says, that should be, you know. By beginning and other signs. So, in other words, what the Veda is giving, by those signs we should be checking. Right? So that's the whole point, is that the Veda, you understand what is the point by these six signs. Right? What is that? What we see is, in the presentation, is according to the Panchanga Nyaya, as he just did. Right. In the next Anucheta, Jiva Goswami begins his demonstration that the Puranas are even more important than the Vedas. 2.1b. The Puranas are Vedic. 2-15.4. Text 12. The difficulty in studying the Vedas.
In the fourth chapter, in Bhagavatam, it says the Mahabharata is even more important than the Vedas in this age.
It means the Puranas in general, that's what he'll bring out. The point is that what is the importance? Importance means it's the sole authority is the Veda, but the point is that doesn't necessarily mean it's the most important in your life. Because it has to be what you can apply in your life that becomes. So the Puranas are giving the same knowledge, but in a form that you can understand it. Like that. Like very few can from the Veda itself or from the Upanishads understand. Right? Otherwise they end up with all kinds of. Because if we're just taking the Veda, we see that six schools seem to have missed the bus. Right? You know, so it's like, you know, it didn't quite work out. Like that. And that's including some are studying the Upanishads. 12.1. We should consider. The authoritative sound of the Vedas is impossible for anyone in present times to study completely. Its meaning is difficult to construe, and even the sages who have explained it in commentaries disagree among one another. For these reasons, we would be well advised to turn our attention to the Shabda Praman of the Itihasas and Puranas, which are substantially non-different from the Vedas, and which definitely explain what the Vedas mean. Since the Vedic text, whose purport is not self-evident, can be deciphered by reference to the Itihasas and Puranas. The Itihasas and Puranas are the appropriate sources of correct knowledge for our times. That's the first verse.
Yeah.
I mean, of this section. Okay. So, okay.
We can say that Itihasas and Puranas, they're easier to understand. That's the point.
Yeah. Means that they're more direct. Because the problem is the Vedic texts, how they're written are obscure, so you'd have to be very, very expert to be able to understand. So, of the Munis who have studied the Veda, Narada is the only one who's come up with pure devotional service. All the other Munis have some other idea. Right? So, therefore, that's why he's in a unique position. So, then doing that, then he's recommending Pancharatra and Naishkarmi. Right, is that these, you know, in other words, direct engagement in the Lord's service in the attitude of, you know, detachment, that it's the result's not for us, it's for the Lord. Does that make sense? So the difficulty comes is that how they're written, then all aspects can be brought from there. It's not that they themselves are confusing or not clear. It's just that being, you know, how you say, the nature of how they're presented, then people could, according to their desire, get so many things from it. Does that make sense? Just like you have a cow, right? You can get some milk and offer it to the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? But we see with Sarabi, or not Sarabi, with Bhumi Devi, then when Parikit Maharaj was, not Parikit, Prithu Maharaj, Then was arranging that everybody in the universe could get what they want from the earth. Everybody was taking, how many were taking milk? You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. So they get they're interested in other things. So they'll see that by their perspective and all. Does that make sense? So that's it, because if everything is based on the Veda, that means the Veda includes everything. So that means one verse could be explaining so many things. But to understand how the essence is pure devotional service, that would take more study. Because, as he mentioned, by using the signs.
Yes.
Right? And so Narad Muni, using the signs, understood what was the essence. But others, using the signs, still only catch what they're interested in. Does that make sense? So the Puranas are more direct. Puranas and Itihasas are more direct. Yes?
Can we summarize that the Veda were reserved to study for the Brahmana?
That element is there, but means your Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas would all study the Veda. But it would be pretty much just the individual what they could do. So your Brahmanas would be more typically who would be going in depth into the Veda.
Yes.
Like that. Others generally tend to not necessarily, not that they couldn't if they were qualified, but generally speaking, just the Brahmins would be. And even that, you see, it's very, not necessarily that they catch. Therefore, you have Karmakanda Brahmins,
yes,
the Jnanakanda, like this.
Yes.
And so then the actual point is upasana means worship the Supreme Lord, because many do upasana, but they just worship demigods. So actually, that's technically part of like karma or jnana. But where upasana means worship the Lord, then it's in its own category. Right? 12.2. Thus we have read in both the Mahabharata and the Manusamhita, one should complete the Vedas with the Itihasas and Puranas. Footnote 4. Itihas Purana Pyam Vedham Samupa Brim Hayet. Mahabharata Adi Parva 1.204. Because right, remember in Manu, it's saying that authority, it means it's always coming from the Veda, but how you apply that authority into your life, it has to have four aspects. The Veda is the first thing, the next is the Smriti, so that'll be Puranas. Then it has to be the authority of the great personalities. how they say it's applied. Then you apply it in your life and you see if it fits. Mm-hmm. Right? If it fits, great. If it doesn't, then you go back and see, you know, what adjustments can be made according to those authorities, not by your own will. Right? So Manu's saying the same thing. Is that the next step is that. So that Manu is also pointing out that it's the you need the Puranas and Itihasas, but you also need the commentaries of the great personalities and the example of how they applied it in their life. Mm-hmm. Because it's not just enough you read it and come up with your own idea. It should be according to the acharyas. Yes, Guru Sadhu Shastra.
So, Mark, it's only one way properly understand Vedas only through the parampara, right?
Yes, through the parampara. Right, so they already, you know, are giving the essence, and in following what Jiva Goswami is saying, then they work according to the system of the Puranas. And the Puranas, then, because you see what we're doing here, we're getting closer.
Right.
So you establish sound, you establish the Veda, how the Veda is perfect. Now you're showing how the Puranas are not only are Vedic, but actually more important for our understanding than the Veda. Though they're based on the Veda, so they won't say anything different from the Veda. Then the next step will be Bhagavatam. Right? So that's just the natural. Now, that's why it was said nothing's left out. There's no way to misinterpret what Jiva Goswami is saying. It's very exact. Right? And elsewhere it is said the name Purana comes from the word completion, Purana. Just as one cannot properly fill in the missing part of a broken gold bangle with cheap tin, one cannot complete the Vedas with that which is not also Veda. Right? So if it's completing the Veda, then it also must be on the same level. 12:13. But if the sound which constitutes the Vedas includes the Puranas and Itihasas, then we need to look within the Vedas for another set of Puranas and Itihasas, a set other than those commonly read. Otherwise, the Itihasas and Puranas will not be non-different from the Vedas. The answer is that they are in fact non-different, because the whole unified collection of words expresses one distinct message. In other words, both have aparusheya authority, having no human author. In spite of this non-difference, the texts are assigned to separate categories in terms of differences in notation and exact order. Right? Does that make sense? The Vedas don't have an exact order, but they have an exact notation. The Puranas have an order, but no notation. That's your difference. So Veda, Shruti, means it's with the intonation. Smriti means it's without. But even here, the point is it's also aparusheya, because it's always been there, so it's just a matter of revelation. Right? It's not that. And each Brahma's means if it was not, then when it's being compiled, they're compiled separately. Right? But the problem is, it's not that Brahma in his court, you know, has however, let me see, means you have 1,000 in a day of Brahma, right? And then that times 360, that times 100, you would have that many of each one of the Puranas, you know, personified in Brahma's court. That itself would be, how do you fit them in? Right? You know, it's like, does that make sense? But there's one Puranic text, you know, personified in his court. Right? You know, if there's one Bhagavatam, one Gita, one, you know, Vishnu Puran, one, you know, it doesn't have a whole ton of them, you know, and then one of them says one thing, it says, no, but in this Kali Yuga, it said it came out like this. So, you know what I'm saying? There's one. So that's the point. They've always been there. It's just a matter of when they're revealed. So the Vedas are revealed first, and then these others, they with time, get revealed.
Personified means what?
Means the Gita as a person is there.
I was wondering if it's a book with two arms and two legs.
No. I think that's a... SpongeBob.
Yeah. to 6% of the revealed scriptures are still available. So the personified rest of the scriptures are...
They're all in Brahma's court. Right. So they, you know, they can have some serious discussion. You know, you can't say that the Gita personified is not an authority on the Gita. Right? You know, so you wouldn't have that kind of problem there.
So they're there but retired?
No, they're there. They're quite active. Just the 6% is about all we can handle. Right, you know, Amy, we're just dealing with Gita, Bhagavatam, yeah. Chaitanya Charitamrita, a couple of like this, yeah. And we're already freaking out so much. Like that, you know. Like you said, there's 17 other Puranas, there's all the Itihasas, that means you have all the Upa Puranas. You know, you have the four Vedas, and they have their sections. Like that, so. That makes sense.
Be satisfied.
Yeah, yeah, satisfying. Because see, a lot of times when you're translating, then it means the Veda. You have to know the Swaras because it has meaning. So then the problem comes is that how do you translate if you don't understand what it means? So it's not just the word, but sometimes by the intonation it changes the word. Mm-hmm. You know, as we mentioned, there's three Swaras on Brahman. So one means, you know, the Supreme Lord, one means Brahma Jyoti, and one means Lord Brahma.
Yes.
Like that, but it depends on the swara that it defines which one it is. So then that also is.
Or fighting for Indra or fighting with Indra?
Yeah, but that's also the swara.
We're about to get into that.
We're going to get into that. Okay. Okay, so in other words, the Puranas have to be a separate set of works if they're the completion of the Vedas, because if they were directly the Vedas, then how would they be the completion? Because the Vedas means there's another set, right? So the point is that they're non-different, because they have one message, though they are differently situated. Does that make sense? So, in other words, some people put out too much the commonality, some too much the difference. So it has to have both aspects, right?
Yes.
So it has to be equivalent to the Veda, as he says, otherwise how can it complete the Veda? So it must be on the same standard as the Veda. But at the same time, it has to be a separate set of works, otherwise how it will complete the Veda if the Veda is one set of works.
Yes.
And it's the same. No, it has to be another set, and that set completes the Veda, but it has to be of the same caliber as the Veda, otherwise how will it complete it?
Yes.
So,
yes.
This non-difference on the grounds that the Itihasas and Puranas are as much Apurusheya as the Rig and other Vedas is implied in the passage of the Madhyandina Shruti, beginning, quote, "Thus, indeed, the breath of the Supreme Being consists, the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharvang, Girasha Veda, Itihas and Purana, Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 4.5.11. Yeah, commentary.
Is that Atharvang, Girasha Veda? Is that the Atharva Veda?
Yeah, I would think so. Because they mentioned the others and then.
Yeah, Angirasa was the sage that it was in.
Okay. Commentary. In the previous Anuchedas, Srila Jiva Goswami has established that the Shruti, Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva constitute the valid means of acquiring knowledge about the Supreme. Here he points out the practical difficulties involved with studying them nowadays. The first difficulty is the unavailability of the complete text of the Vedas. The second is the dull brains of the people of Kali Yuga. Again mentioned. See, he's not forgetting about it. In his commentary to this Anucheda, Jiva Goswami insists that the Vedas in Kali Yuga are dushpara, difficult to fully understand. No one knows the Vedas completely because they are not even completely available for study. And even those parts that are available cannot be fully deciphered by the less intelligent scholars of modern times. Is there a reason for the available kanak being underlined?
No, that's just the delineation between the body and the footnote. It's just Purport one out.
Oh, okay. I was thinking maybe something vague. Special, important part. They are available kanak. Yeah, you know, so we wanted to get available kanak. The problem with Shruti means problem for us understanding. Means Shruti has no problem. It has a problem. Right?
Important point.
Fragmentary remains. Shruti, what has been heard, refers to eternal revealed scripture received by rishis in meditation and passed down orally through unbroken lines of teachers and disciples. Originally, the Veda was one, and at the advent of the current age, Kali Yuga, Srila Vyasadeva divided into four. Vyadadhad Yajna Santatyai Vedam Ekam Chatur Vidham. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.4.19. Then Vyasadeva's followers further divided the four Vedas into 1,130 branches. These are called recessions, like that. Much of the time they said the term used by those in this, they generally call recession, unless he uses recession in another place. Okay. Because the branch is, it's a recession means, because the branch makes it feel like it's, you know, some port or some like this and that. The recession means the how exactly they're chanting it. What exactly is the method for chanting. Because there's, with any one thing of grammar, you have some variety of ways you can use, some options. So someone chooses this option, someone chooses that option. Right? And so then in it, in the word or groups of words, there's so many options. So which ones you pick, and that combination is what comes up with your recessions. Like that. Formerly, the Rig Veda was divided into 21. The Yajurveda into 100, the Samaveda into 1,000, the Atharvaveda into 9. Right? So nowadays, I'm not sure in the Rig Veda, Yajurveda there's only a couple, Samaveda there's 3 remaining. It's just the style of chanting, like that. And Atharva, I only know of one. There's hardly any Atharvavedis around. Yes.
Maharaj, the meaning remains the same? Does the chanting is different?
The chanting is different. It should remain the same. But the, you know, because there should be a consistency. But the thing is you'd have to, that I, why they use the different things, I'm not sure. You know, so because you get all the different, even out of these, let's say, I was told that someone had shown how the local languages in India come from the way the Veda was chanted. So, in other words, how the pronunciation was done on this side of India is what gives rise to the Bengali language. Right? So these language came out of the way that they were, you know, it's like here. In other words, it's a Vedic thing that you can change a B and a V. But most recessions don't do that. If it's a B, it's a B, and if it's a V, it's a V. But on this side, they did like that. So the Bengali, you have that aspect. Right? So everything goes back to the Veda. Okay. Each branch of each Veda contains 4 subdivisions. Samhitas, collection of hymns and incantations. Brahmanas, interpretations of rituals. Aranyakas, elucidations of esoterics. And Upanishads, philosophical treatises. So altogether, the Veda consists of 1,130 Samhitas, 1,130 Brahmanas, 1,130 Aranyakas, and 1,130 Upanishads. A total of 4,520 titles. Okay, so then in this way then, is all the aspects. Okay. By the influence of time, however, many texts have been lost. At present, only about 11 Samhitas, 18 Brahmanas, 7 Aranyakas, and 220 Upanishads are available. This constitutes less than 6% of the original Vedas. Because much of the time, in these different brahmanas, they bring out different aspects. You know, they'll explain a different part. So then what happens is through all that, then you get to know everything. Otherwise, your brahmana will explain certain things, but certain things it doesn't. It just shows how to do it, but it may not explain behind it or some connections or that. But then the brahmana itself will explain these things. Like, you know, for us, what it means, or what's prominently used, but we use the Satapati Brahmana. So then it's that's there, but there's like these, how many brahmanas you say? 18 brahmanas. That's all that's there.
Upanishads, each and every Veda, they kind of part of it?
Means the Veda, the brahmanas, the Aranyakas, and the Upanishads, that's called the Veda. Right? Because the Samhita is how is the verses. The brahmanas are showing how those verses are applied in ritual. The Aranyakas then explain what are the esoterics of those rituals and mantras and why those connections. The Upanishads, they show what are the, the philosophy that the Samhita is giving. Right? So in other words, you have the verses of the Veda, and then you have one explains the ritual, one explains the esoterics or the metaphysics, one explains the philosophy. Like that. So then, if there's all these different combinations, then they'll bringing out all these different aspects. Does that make sense? That's why sometimes you see different, like, there'll be verses, but then they'll be different. Right? You know, somebody's, you know, Upanishad will be different from someone else's Upanishad. Like that. Yes, because they come with the different lines. Even in the same thing in each Veda has a Purusha Shukta, because that's the first hymn in each Veda. But each one is different, how many verses and all that. Rig Veda has 16, Yajur Veda has 18. Sama Veda only has 9. Like that. Atharva, I'm not sure.
Which one do you?
We're using two different Yajurveda ones and the Kotama line of means. We're using the Taittiriya Shaka of the Yajurveda. And we're using the, you know, I'm not sure it's the shaka, but of the Shukla Yajurveda, we're using a specific shaka there. And we're using the Kotama of the Samaveda. So those are the three reasons. Yes.
And the meaning is different?
There's certain verses that are the same, but one has more verses, and it's all about the primary creation, but it's just how much of it's described and all that. That's what we're saying, is that when you have them all, then you'll get verses that, like, there's something you wonder, what is this? What goes? What's the explanation of this? It'll be in another one.
Yes, yes.
So before it was, is that, you know, all the whole Veda you could study.
Yes.
Because it was one Veda.
Yes.
But then it's been divided, and then you have all the recessions in that. But before they studied it as one Veda.
Yes.
You know, so that means it's pretty big, right? Yes.
In this connection, what does metaphysics mean?
You know, like your analyzation of means, just like, let's say the yajna spoon is there. Okay. Now the yajna spoon, the shruva, the one you use for the regular pouring of ghee, then in Samaveda it's split down the middle. It's got two sides. Okay, so then, you know, the brahmana will say to use this kind of shruva, right? But then why two sides for the sun, you know, the sun and the moon? Or why the sun and the moon? Because that's the nostrils of Yajna Varaha. Why Yajna Varaha? Why not somebody else? Because he's the Lord of Sacrifice. That's the things that it will deal with. Like that. So most, if you ask, they have no idea. But, you know, I asked this to one who was, you know, one of the top, you know, how you say, priests in India, you know, and I asked, you know, and I went through that. And he just, like that, just said, because that's this, and that's this. So he had that understanding. So he was more studied.
So can you say that is...
That, you understand? So people will, they've read the Samhita, but it doesn't tell about the ritual. Some basic things will say Indra did this and he used this mantra, used this, but it's not telling the whole thing. Because people who know it, then, you know, does that make sense? You know. So then the Brahmanas, then they'll explain the ritual. Right, but why the ritual is done in that way? What are the technicalities of it? You know, these the metaphysical explanations of it that the Aranyakas give, and the philosophical that the Upanishads will give. Does that make sense? So, that when we say the Veda, we mean at least we're talking about all that. But then the different Vedas are bringing out different aspects. So that means you'd have to rate all four there. So that right there, you're talking about 16 groups of stuff. You know, so four Samhitas, four Brahmanas, four this. But each one of them has so many subdivisions. Like that. So the point is, therefore, what's here now is 11 Samhitas, 18 Brahmanas, 7 Aranyakas, and 220 Upanishads. Like that. That's what's available. You know, and who's studying all that? You know, we went through one Upanishad.
For 2 years?
Yeah. And so only, 219 to go. Right?
Yeah.
That makes sense? You know, so that's the whole point. And we didn't even get into the study of the, you know, all the other elements, the Swaras and this and that. Grammatical explanations. Right? So in other words, it was much easier, you know, when you lived 100,000 years, then it worked out.
This is some serious stuff.
Yeah. You know, so. Yeah. At least, you know, 1,000 years. Yeah. Yes.
Where it talks about the students who are like tree hider, which I'm like, are there any schools in India offering that to study nowadays?
Now, generally, it means that they just learn the verses for that or the rituals according to that. Now, at most any gurukul you go to, then they learn one whole Veda. So if they're three Veda, it means they've learned three Vedas. Right? Because they memorize the Samhita. Right? And then they'll probably, according to their particular Veda, or according to which Veda does what particular thing, then they will learn the rituals that go with it. But they don't get into philosophy or this or that. Those that get into the philosophy, they generally, they may learn one Veda, but it's not a matter of that. They'll study the philosophical elements. They won't get into rituals and stuff like that, other than basic kind of stuff. You know, in other words, their basic is, you know, way over our head, but, you know, it's just, they don't focus there. You know, if they're into grammar, then they'll learn that, but they focus on grammar. So they don't, it's not so broad anymore. So someone says Chaturvedi generally means they know they've been initiated into the four lines and have learned those four. But generally, they would be, someone like a Trivedi should be graduated about 32 years old. Right? Does that make sense? If one Veda that can graduate at 16, two it would be 24, 25, three it would be 32. Generally four means 48. Right. And then having graduated, then they can get married. So I guess that's also why you see less of these higher levels, because they graduated so late and they have less kids and there's less of them, so there's not that many. Okay, the fallen souls. Okay. Of the Iron Age. In the present age, Kali Yuga, efforts to understand the Vedic text directly are almost sure to be frustrated, right? Because he's talking about direct and just going in that, like that. Yeah. In Kali Yuga, truly qualified brahmanas are rare. Like that one that I mentioned. He had done the installation, or was involved in it in Hyderabad. And when Srila Prabhupada came for the installation, then they chanted all the mantras, you know, all the time, place, all these kind of things like that. You know, and received Prabhupada and did this whole thing. And then Prabhupada mentioned to the devotees, he says, these are real Brahmins. Like that. You know, most, you know, they're born in families and they know a little something. He said, this guy knows. And he was. You could see. When you talked to him, he knew. You know, he would recommend, he'd do all these things. Very, very qualified.
He was in which line or something?
Shri. Okay. In Kali Yuga, truly qualified Brahmins are rare. Those who are Brahmanas in name only or are otherwise unfit cannot understand the Shruti scriptures. There are simply too many Shruti texts for a less intelligent person to read through. What to speak of comprehend, right? Not even to read it, it's comprehend. The Vedic words of tens of thousands and millions of years ago was a different place, the Vedic world, with educated people much more capable of understanding subtle topics unfamiliar and inscrutable to us today. Like someone other than yourself is important. Moreover, today's extant commentaries on the Vedas, like Shaina's from the 14th century, are too recent to prove reliable insight into the original intentions of the texts. 14th century, so that means, yeah, 700 years ago. It's just too recent. It's too contemporary. It kind of takes contemporary to a different level.
All these modern things.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Mentioned, you know, the Greeks. Oh, so modern. Yeah. Yeah.
Mars the Jackals were there when you were saying about the Brahmins.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That was their Hari Ball, right? Yeah. The fallen souls, Hari Ball. You know, the unqualified Brahmins. Yeah. We're here. To further complicate matters, in Kali Yuga, human memory has grown weaker. In former times, there were no books. Students were Shrutidhara. They could assimilate all knowledge from the Guru simply by hearing and remembering. This is no longer possible. In this age, the food, the air, water, and even the very ether are all polluted. And you know, I mean, ether is not a big thing these days. But ether means space. Like this, we're sitting in this much, but how much space is around? You know what I'm saying? If this was in a, you know, a modern kind of context, it means how many people are here, that's how big the room would be. You know? So that's it. This ether is less, you know. Before they go out and sit under a tree, there's plenty of ether. Because ether is necessary for, it's one of the elements necessary for health. Prabhupada talks about it. I don't remember the details. But he's talking about, you know, when we think about, you know, good air, good water, but people don't think about ether. But Prabhupada makes the point, without ether, then there's no, it doesn't work either. So this idea there should be space. Because yeah, nowadays, it's, you know, you pack it up as small as possible, better. You know, it's like that.
Mars, it said in the serving of prasadam, then there should be han space between each person. So then that would help with the digestion. Is it all, you know, like the first?
Where did it say that?
I remember we had a prasadam event.
Oh, okay. So I'll ask him. Or maybe it's Ayurveda. Yeah. That shouldn't be too cramped. But it doesn't mean that. With prasad, it's that would be in general, but with prasad and devotees, it's not as important. You know, it's about the prasad. The other is about, you know, about the health, and this, that. So, in other words, the grihasthas, they should worry about those, you know, to make this sort of this proper space and everything like that. But, you know, the brahmacharis and that, you know, it doesn't matter. There's a bucket of pollen, you know, 10 boys can eat out of it, you know, so it's cool. It works. Right? You know, ether is enough space to get your hand inside.
Krishna and the cowherd boys are feeding each other.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it takes on a different thing. But as far as the point is that ether is important.
It was in the same line that the Gurukul is in the air.
It's always in the open environment.
Yes.
Like that. It's always, you know, generally they're next to rivers and they're open and stuff like that. So they need space like that. The kids, if they're in the tight space, it's always crazy. If they're in a big space, you know, they're not. And even if they are, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
You know, it's like that's the, you know. You know, in the schools in the city, they bounce off the walls. In the Gurukul, there are no walls, so you know nobody bounces off the walls because if you see any walls, you know, how are you going to bounce off the walls?
Intelligent. Hmm? Intelligent.
Yeah. And all these factors have taken their toll on human memory, making it difficult to study. Even the available 6% of the Vedic texts, what to speak of the entire 4 Vedas and the branches. One thing Prabhupada brings out that's even more important than food, water, air, ether is regulation. Right? Because people have sometimes weird diets and live in weird places, but because they're exactly regulated, then, you know, they live long, they do all those different things. But you have to add to it, living long is not enough. You also have, the brain has to work, all these different things. Srila Jiva Goswami therefore concludes that although the 4 Vedas are perfect, Shabda Praman, in the present age it is impractical to study them thoroughly and thereby ascertain the absolute truth. As an alternative, someone may suggest that since only a few of the Vedas are available, and even they are difficult to understand, why not simply study the Vedanta Sutra, the definitive summary of the Vedic conclusions? To this, Jiva Goswami replies that various thinkers differ about the meaning of the Vedanta Sutra, and so this method will likely lead to confusion. The orthodox philosophical darshans each claim a Vedic connection. But except for Jaimini's Mimamsa philosophy and Dvaipayana's Vedanta, they all merely pay lip service to Aparusheya Shabda Praman, impractically ignoring it. Karma Mimamsa, right? And so, right. So Jaimini, he will refer back to the Veda very nicely. Right? Like that. And then Vyasadeva, he will also do the same. Right? So yeah. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, Vedanta is philosophy. Vedanta Sutra is documenting Vedanta in Sutra form.
Yes.
It's not that Vedanta Sutra is itself the only form of Vedanta. Right, that, you know, yes. Does that make sense? Yes. Vedanta is the Upanishadic philosophy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right? Karma Mimamsa minimizes the authority of the Upanishads, right, and their approach to absolute truth, so that then you won't get a complete understanding. Right? Gautama's Nyaya school and Kanada's Vaisheshika study only the logic and structure of the physical world. And in opposition to the Upanishads, the Shankya philosophy, the atheist Kapila, and the yoga system of Patanjali, consider material nature the prime cause of creation, and the soul, or God, only a passive witness. In general, the standard darshans disagree with one another on major points of epistemology and ontology, and the existing commentaries on the ancient sutras of each of these schools are all younger than 2,000 years. Far removed in time from the actual Vedic civilization. For all these reasons, we must admit that even with the help of the Vedas and Vedanta, we will not be able to understand Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. Smriti to the rescue. To resolve this dilemma, Srila Jiva Goswami proposes an alternative study of the Smriti. Not just any limb of Smriti, however, but the Itihasas and Puranas in particular. Various sages composed diverse kinds of Smritis. Some wrote handbooks to explain the details of Vedic sacrificial performances. Shrauta sutras for major sacrifices and Griya sutras for rituals performed at home. Manu and others compiled law books, the Dharma Shastras, but especially important for the spiritual education of the people are the Itihasas, epics such as Ramayana and Mahabharata, and the Puranas. They aim to explain all aspects of Vedic knowledge to the common person, often through entertaining historical narratives. Footnote 5. Out of compassion, the great sage thought it wise that this would enable men to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Thus, he compiled the great historical narration called the Mahabharata for women, laborers, and friends of the twice-born, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.4.25. Right? Because then the medium that it uses is very accessible. Right? Like that. Same knowledge, just in a more accessible way. It's not in such a technical, intellectual presentation. Although both the Itihasas and Puranas describe the ancient history of the universe, the Itihasas generally concentrate on single heroes or stories which the Puranas deal with, while the Puranas deal with an assortment of topics, right? Because the Purana has to have at least minimum of 5 topics. It must give primary creation, secondary creation, the history of the Prajapatis, history of the Manus, and history of the kings of the Sun and Moon dynasty. Right, then it's a Purana. That's Puranic, format. Right? Then the Mahapuranas, they have an additional 5. So they have those, like you see, the Bhagavatam runs through all those, because that's all the stories that are about. But in that, it also points out, you know, the Supreme, it points out all the different, the protection, all these different other elements. Right? So that must be there. Itihas means it takes one of those personalities and expands on it. Right? But to get to the Pandavas, then you have the whole lineage how you get there. So there's so many stories. Right? And then Mahabharata, just like Bhagavatam, they ask, well, how did it come to be spoken? What's the history? So then a huge amount of the opening is all about this snake sacrifice that Janamejaya had that the Mahabharata was spoken at. Right? So then it's only after all that you get down to what was actually spoken. Just like first Canto goes, then Sukadeva Goswami starts to speak. So like that also, Mahabharata is the same. Right? But it's just about the Pandavas. Right? So we'll take it as the Pandavas. If you want to be specific, then Yudhishthira. Right? Because it's him in history of with his brothers. That's how we would look. But the Madhvas, they'll look at it as Bhima. It's about Bhima. Because right? Yeah. Bhima is one of the 4 incarnations. So then, like that. There are 18 major Puranas, including Srimad Bhagavat Purana, and at least as many secondary Puranas or Upa Puranas. Now here, there's a difference here. These Upa Puranas mean secondary Puranas written in Puranic form. But the Upa Puranas also refers to the Upa Puranas, meaning these other aspects of, means Gandharva Veda, Stapana Veda, Ayurveda, and Dhanurveda. These 4, which we much of the time refer to as Upa Veda. But we'll generally refer to them as Upa Purana. Because Upa Veda is this, when you only accept the Veda itself, then they connect all these, whatever they like, to there. But otherwise, if you're expecting Shruti and Smriti, then it will fall into Smriti, so it will be connected with the Puranas. Srila Jiva Goswami's attitude towards the Itihasas and Puranas is radical in comparison with the traditional view dividing the scriptural literature into Shrutis and Smritis. He claims that the authentic Itihasas and Puranas are also authorless, which means that their texts, even though they appear to have been written by sages like Vyasadeva, do not change from one age to another. In text 13 through 17, he will cite scriptural support for his opinion.
All right.
Yes.
Just a question. It said that 18
Purana.
Yes.
But there was a beat of 16.
Huh? No, 18. 18. 6, 6, and 6.
6, 6. Ah, yes.
Yeah. Like that.
Okay.
Linguistic differences between Shruti and Smriti. The Itihasas and Puranas are easier to understand than the Vedas because they are written in Alaukika Sanskrit, which is spoken rather than Vaidika Sanskrit, which is only chanted. Right? The Laukika means what people use, so that's what we call classical Sanskrit.
Yes.
Like that. Right? Only Vaidika Sanskrit is found in the four Vedas. Furthermore, the esoteric meanings of the Vedas are more accessible in the Itihasas and Puranas because these works are narrated in story form. And whereas only the Dwijas, the twice-born Vedic initiates, are supposed to study the Vedas, that restriction does not apply to the study of the Itihasas and Puranas. Anyone may read them. Even the Puranas' original speaker, Suta Goswami, was not a twice-born Brahmana. The Itihasas and Puranas convey the same conclusion as the Vedas. And since they come from the same source, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are also free from the four human defects, and thus qualify as perfect Shabda Praman. The Itihasas and Puranas should therefore be considered as reliable as the four Vedas. But although the Itihasas and Puranas are one with the Vedas, this does not mean they are literally identical with them. That's the point. Is in other words, the meaning that they're expressing is the same, but it's not that they are within the same category of literature.
Yes.
Right, because they're a different group of literature. Otherwise, the words Itihas and Puran would simply be names for certain special parts of the Vedas. Right? Just like you have Samhita, Brahmana, Aranyaka, and Upanishad. Because in the Vedas, there isn't something else in this. So then, Itihas, Purana would be just other parts. No, they're within Smriti. The Vedas are written in Vedic Sanskrit, which necessarily involves three different tone accents: Udatta high, Swarita intermediate, and Anudatta low. And in the And that's what they'll use in Rig Yajur and Atharva, and for the hymns, because the hymns are the Rigs, which are found in the Rig Veda and Sama Veda. But the Samans themselves, they have seven notes, but they have different forms. So there's actually nine that you have to learn. So when they're written, you don't just see little markings. They have numbers and lines and the whole thing like that. They're very, very elaborate. You know? So you might have something like this long, you know, and all the tunes going ha, ooh, ha, ooh, ha, ooh, like that. But it was that long because all the numbers that are there. Yeah. In the Vedic language, the meaning of a word can be changed if the accent is changed. Footnote 6. An example of this occurs in the history of the demon Vritta, who was created by the chanting of a mantra during a sacrifice. After Vishwarupa was killed, his father, Tvashta, performed ritualistic ceremonies to kill Indra. He offered oblations into the fire, saying, "O enemy of Indra, flourish to kill your enemy without delay." Srimad Bhagavatam 6.9.11. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. There was some defect in Tvashta's chanting of the mantra because he chanted it long instead of short. And therefore the meaning changed. Right? Now, devotees will, looking at the Sanskrit, they will say, "No, it's short. Why is Prabhupada saying it's long? You know, why would that long thing come up? So how could a mistake be made?" Because they don't know about Vedic Sanskrit. Otherwise, then they wouldn't make such foolish comments. Right? Because when you're dealing with Rig Veda and Atharva Veda, there's a mark that goes in there that's long. But the word itself technically is short. You know, so somehow or another he either put that in or left it out. So he made a mistake. He thought that would go there. But it didn't. You know. So that's the whole point. So if you ever hear Sanskrit just sitting and getting all bent out of shape about this, then just know that they don't know what they're talking about. You know? They've learned classical, but that doesn't mean they have any idea to make it. Like that, you know. that we have to remember, Prabhupada translated Ishopanishad. Like that. And in our movement, I only know Banu Maharaj can translate Vedic Sanskrit. There's, I don't know of one other. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So the whole point is it's that's the point. Tvashta intended to chant the word Indra Shatro, meaning, O enemy of Indra. In this mantra, the word Indra is in the possessive case, Shasti. And the word Indra Shatro is called Tatpurusha compound, Tatpurusha Samasa. Unfortunately, instead of chanting the mantra short, Tvashta chanted it long. And its meaning changed from the enemy of Indra to Indra, who is an enemy. Consequently, instead of an enemy of Indra's, there emerged the body of Ritrasura, of whom Indra was the enemy. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yes, yeah, so in other words, you know, Indra would flourish.
Yes.
Instead of Indra's enemy would flourish. Like that.
Quickly packed up the spoons and everything.
Srimad Bhagavatam 6.9.11. That's why the Karmakanda things, it's all about the thing. You get one, when Prabhupada says one syllable, it means
yes.
It. One syllable can ruin a whole thing. And you're talking about these, they're not necessarily very short. They're very elaborate to set up. So anything. So he only made one mistake and then see what he got. Right? So let alone, let's say, a Soma Yajna that takes 9 months to perform. Right?
Yeah.
And then you get one drop of Soma out of it.
I'll just chant Hare Krishna.
Well, okay. Good choice. This demon was supposed to kill Indra, but the result was just the opposite. Indra killed Vritrasura. Okay. A scholar of ordinary Sanskrit must learn extra vocabulary and rules of grammar, which require years of study. It means 300 more rules after the 3,000. Right? So if you only know part of them, you know, let's say, most will say, you know, about 1,000 of them are what you'll generally use, like that. Some of them you can go your whole lifetime and maybe not see a rule used or see it once. That's why Jiva Goswami, he wrote the, Gopal Champu, just so that there's an example of every rule, right? And then, this is the kicker, right? Then you have those, most Sanskritists learn, you know, from, you know, these funny little books that they learn in Western universities, and they call it Sanskrit, right? Which means you don't actually know what's going on. You just know that this is what's there. I see this, I translate it like that. What happens in between, I have no idea. Like that. You know, I have a potato, and then, you know, on the table, then there's a baked potato, you know, it's got, you know, butter and everything and all that kind of stuff. What happened in between? Zero understanding. Like zero would be probably a euphemism. Nothing. Right? And that's the thing. And somehow or another, then they're the great Sanskritists. So it's all right for just, you know, appreciating in that and doing translation of classical. But it in no way comes near to giving any understanding how to deal with the Vedic. Does that make sense? So that's why we have to be very, very careful. Only why I'm saying that, because people will try to say, well, Prabhupada made a mistake here. But then he's only commenting on what the Bhagavatam says. Right? And so, you know, how will they be making a mistake? Yes.
Whereas is the Vedic Sanskrit complicated because it's manipulating sound, the elements through sound?
That's another thing. That's the point. Is it's God's rules? You do what He says, it works, right? You know. So it's not that your word transforms it. It because it's God's potency that does it. But He's given the mechanics that you're going to do that through this method. But it's not because I chanted it has to happen. No, it's because you chanted it, the Lord's pleased, therefore it happens. Is that okay? Yeah. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, your mother was pleased, that's how the potato got on the table. Right? Not pleased, you know, there's, you know,
it's in the dog.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's even better. You know, so prepare it and then give it to the dog. I like this is a tough mom. Yeah. I would have said it's in the, you know, the pantry, you know, you can go bake your own potato. You know? But, that's even better. That's tough. That's classical. Any Sanskrit that we bumped into except Ishopanishad, that's all classical. Ishopanishad, that's Vedic. Like that. So it works differently. What creates long and short and things like that? How it's chanted long and short, it's different. Yeah. So it's different. It means if you have two consonants and before them is a short syllable, the length of it will actually get long because the when there's a double consonant, you get an extra half matras added. Like you say Uttama, but it's actually Uttama. Like so that there's that extra bit is there. So all the little things like that. That's in the classical you can apply it or not, but in the Vedic then these are applied. Otherwise it doesn't work. Okay. A scholar of ordinary Sanskrit must learn extra vocabulary and rules of grammar, which require years of study in order to understand Vedic Sanskrit. For example, even before studying the Vedas, one must study their six corollaries or limbs called Vedangas. These six limbs are Siksha, the science of correct pronunciation and intonation, as variously practiced by the schools of each Veda. So in other words, you have to learn the one specific to the Veda that you want to deal with, because it's not just generic. Like that. As we mentioned, that's how you get the different recessions, is because each one uses a different combination. Like that. Kalpa, the detailed process of performing rituals and sacrifice. Vyakaran, the rules of grammar. Nirukta, Vedic lexography, which sets forth the meanings of difficult words using the Vedas and their etymological derivations. Jyotisha means, I think it's like a Yaska, he gives the dictionary Nirukta. They probably quotes it a lot. Yes. Now that's Vedic, on Vedic Sanskrit. Right? It's not used in classical, and it's very short. It's only like 100 pages, but how it defines everything, it puts it together because Sanskrit is something that you build from the root, and so then he's dealing with that kind of level of using the Sanskrit. So in 100 pages it covers everything you need to know about vocabulary in the Vedic Sanskrit. Does that make sense? So you'd have to be a scholar to use it. It's not like the modern, just pick it up and basically if you can figure out what an upside down E is, then you can read it, and if you can't, then you don't know what's going on. It's pretty straight like that. So then that's also another thing. Prabhupada's always quoting, from Nirukta.
Yes.
Okay. Jyotisha, astronomy and astrology. Astronomy used for calculating the correct times for performing sacrifices. And Chandas, the Vedic theory of poetic meters. Each of these limbs is extensive and requires serious study. And even when the language of the Vedic verses is fathomed, their cryptic nature makes them impossible to decipher without hearing them explained by a bona fide guru in specific succession. Right? You've all heard the translations of some of the texts and stuff? I know sometimes we'll read you some verses from the wedding ceremony or something really good. It's like the waves of ghee, falling on the fire then destroys the wood, Indra destroying Vritra, like this, and these guys, it's like these are how it's going, and he's writing on Dadi Krubi, a horse, white like yogurt and stuff like this. That's the verse. And with that, because in there the word sindur is used, that's the verse used when the husband puts the sindur on the head of the girl. But that's the verse. You understand? So what's going on here? Then that's the whole thing. Another significant difference between the four Vedas and the Itihasas and Puranas is the sequence of particular words, which is rigidly fixed in the Vedas. No one should change even one syllable of the Vedic text. You can't rearrange the order. You can't go bhajamana hure. You can't do that. It just is no work. Right? The others, okay, it gets by, but it's just like It doesn't change the meaning. It just which have maintained their primeval arrangement of words since the beginning of creation. Techniques have been devised, such as Padapata, Kramapat, Ganapat, and Jatapat, for keeping the word order intact. In other words, it's also how you say. It's for also learning, so that you know. It's just like you say someone knows it frontwards and backwards. Yeah. So in the Vedic context, it's actually real. Because some of the chanting, you're chanting it backwards. So you go forward, then you go backwards, then you go forward, then you go backwards and forward. So that means you know it forward and backwards. You know, and then you know the text will be exact. So that's also before, is not only did they memorize the text in its you know, the Samhita Pad, but they memorize it in all the other seven. So then, you know, it takes like I don't know if you've heard sometimes of the yajna. At the end of the yajna, all the boys are standing and they're doing these things. They're just repeating words over and over and over again. Yeah. Yes. And you see, it takes them like 5 minutes. Yes. That's like a, you know, a one sentence verse. But it takes that long to chant because that's frontwards and backwards fully. Mm-hmm. Other ones do it partially and all kinds of interesting. So here we'll explain the other what's going on. As a basic help in studying the Vedas, the Padapatas, word-by-word readings, transcribe each word and word compound of the text in the forms they originally had before the euphonic sound changes were applied to them. Padapat, you know, you go Sahasra, Shirsha, Purusha, like this. You just go one by one. That way then the kids catch the word. Then you start putting it together. The Samhitas, to better ensure exact memorization, the Samhitas are also meant to be recited phrase by phrase in the Kramapata. In the Kramapata, the words are repeated in permuted order. In the simplest form of Kramapata, the repetition is done in groups of two, the second word of each pair being the first word of the next pair. Thus, a sequence of words represented by A, B, C, D in the Samhita becomes A, B, B, C, C, D. Right? So in other words, Padapata is A, B, C, D, like that. This is A, B, B, C, C, D, right? And then at the end you go A, B, C, C, B, A. A, B, C,
B, C, D, B, C,
B? Something like that. No, but it's more complicated than that. But it's basically you go forward, you go back. You go forward, and then you go back, then you go forward one more. So you have to go back and forth a few times before it adds one word.
The same way you learn scales on the harmonium, you also go four in one direction and three in the other kind of thing.
Yeah, like that. I mean, it's one of the forms. Yes, so like that. Hence, no rewording or rearrangement of words is allowed in the Vedas. By contrast, the Edas of Purana need not be so rigidly preserved. Their exact wordings are allowed to vary in different yuga cycles. Indeed, one definition of smriti, what has been remembered, refers to works composed by sages who maintain the message of shruti without always repeating the exact wording in the same order. Because no special techniques are used to keep the word order in the Puranas and Itihasas intact, we find slight differences in various editions. The objection to smriti. The opposing opinion addressed in text 12.3 centers on the view held by some ritualistic brahmanas, impersonalist Vedantists, and contemporary Hindu reform movements. These groups acknowledge the authority of shruti but not of most smriti texts. According to this opinion, when shruti texts enjoin that one recite the Itihasas and Purans, they refer not to the more recent text now called as such, but to certain passages of the original Veda. In support of this view, some Vedic passages fit the functional definition of Itihas narrations. For example, the Taittiriya Upanishad 3.1.2.1 says, Yato va imani bhutani jayante, from that supreme everything in existence was generated, and etasmad atmana akasha sambhuta. From that supreme soul, the sky came into being. Therefore, this view concludes the popular, recently composed smritis cannot be the real Itihasas and Puranas and cannot correctly be equated with the perfect eternal Vedas. Srila Jiva Goswami replies by confirming that all the Vedic literatures from the Rig Veda through the Puranas is essentially a single conception. Only because the languages of the Shruti and Smriti are different are the texts designated separately. The Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad is also referred to by the name Madhyandina Shruti because its best known recession belongs to the Madhyandina branch of the Vajasaneyi White Yajurveda. Because the Atharva Veda appeared in the meditation of two sages, Atharva and Angira, it is sometimes called the Atharva-Angirasa Veda. Puranas complete the Vedas. Yes.
Maharaj, is there an aspect that the four Vedas are often recited in like a karmakanda or ritualistic fashion? Therefore, that's why the pronunciation and the technical recitation has to be so precise. Whereas the Smriti, on the other hand, is for those who are after the essence or for devotional purposes.
One could say like that. It also, I would say, is that, I mean, you have the point of accessibility is the main. But the other one is if you're going to do karmakanda, you're going to do the ritual, then the ritual has to be exact. How exact? It's just like in anything material. How exact you do it is how good it comes out. You know, how exactly you cook is how good, technically proper, the preparation will be. But if you're cooking in devotion, then it may not even be technically correct, but if Krishna's pleased with your devotion, it will actually taste nice. Right? But you do something so perfectly technically correct, and you offer it to the Lord, and you think, wow, this is going to be good. Generally, that's the time when it's really ordinary. Like that. You know what I'm saying? Because it's about the Lord. So there's more to it, just that. It's that the karmakanda, yes, it needs to be technical, but it's also the ritual, the mantra, everything. It's not just the mantras. You know, the exact cleanliness, the titi. I mean, it's like you could drive yourself nuts with that. But, you know, to be wanting material facility, you got to be nuts in the first place. Is that makes sense? You know, it makes it like that. But the point, yeah, I would say is you have that aspect of just it's. If you're saying it's apurusheya, then you know it's the way it always is. Then you have to have the element that it doesn't change. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, then you'll end up with this. Like nowadays, you know, if something's different than the person appreciates, then they just, you know, pull out the interpolation card. Right? It's always interpolator put in, it's this and that, it's changed, so therefore we don't really know what it says. Mm-hmm. You know, bring me the original thing, then I'll look at it, you know, and I'll figure it out. But that's, you know, that doesn't... The point is What's the understanding of the science that you're studying? What's that qualification? Mm-hmm. Because grammar is not it. Mm-hmm. Grammar is not what you're going to figure anything out. Grammarians are always one of in the first bunch to be given the booth. Mm-hmm. You know, logicians, grammarians, they're always the first to go. You know, even the Mayavadis come after that. You know, they're just the first to go. Moralists, grammarians, means they have a certain understanding of a particular very narrow point that's useful in a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. But if you don't understand the culture you're dealing with, especially with the Purana, you're dealing with culture, if you don't understand that, why would grammar make you understand it? Mm-hmm. You know, it's where's the access? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You know, it's like that. It's like, you know how to fix a carburetor, but you can't drive a car. You know, so how is it that, you know, well, show me the carburetor, I'll tell you what's wrong, why the car, you know, went to, you know, off the road. Yeah, how is that going to work? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not going to function like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because it is intellectual in that, and the intellectual is, by the Vedas, establishes a higher aspect of respect, then, naturally, then, you know everything. But it actually, you know, is only a support for the actual understanding. Does that make sense? So you have to deal with how people are materially going to see it, but you're also going to have to look at the actual transcendental position. So, you know, on that material, if you're going to look at it from the material platform, then it has to be exact. But like, those who are more interested in spiritual are studying the Upanishads. Right? And so there it's not a matter of necessarily memorizing, you just study them. But, you know, you understand the grammar, it brings out something more of what the word meaning, but it's about the philosophy. You know what I'm saying? Because you have to know something about the if you're going to deal in opera vidya, you have to know something. You know, if you're going to deal with material knowledge, you have to know that branch of material knowledge. You know what I'm saying? Someone who knows grammar, then they could technically go through and, let's say, translate Ayurveda. But they wouldn't actually know what's going on there. So because of that, there may be some misunderstandings of how they decide. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's always... And plus you have to, you know, throw into the mix here, just for fun, is that that means that you learn the university grammar, right? And it shows you this. So you know what to look for in the word. You know, you're going to start with not knowing anything. You know, as far as vocabulary. And so, what's your book? Mr. Monier Williams, right? And so, Monier Williams is a British guy who wasn't really that much interested in the Vedas, though some interest in it, but not as establishing it as necessarily a superior culture, you know. And so, he's documented, you know, what to him is straightforward meanings. But accordingly, there's much more. And besides that, he has a separate dictionary, it's just as fad. For Vedic stuff. But most people just try to use the classical. But the classical has many, many more words. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the element, is that it's the approach is very different. So that means anybody who's dealing with the university, then the vocabulary they know is only Monier Williams. So which word he picked, and it means this, that's all they can say. I've seen people argue, no, it says here. The point is, it's not. It's usually just used in a completely different way. It's just, you know, he didn't pick one of the other alternatives because it was obscure. Does that make sense? So that's the, you know. And then with that, now you're going to understand because you know grammar. You know, so in the Ayurveda, you'll choose a word that, you know, Moni Williams said would be the right word, but in Ayurveda, they would have used a completely different word, someone who knows Ayurveda. You know, a synonym. We're talking synonyms here. Is that some sense? Yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami says the Puranas are so named because they make the Vedas complete. Does he mean the Vedas are incomplete? No, but the Puranas are a form of explanatory supplementary literature that help us understand the terse, cryptic message of the Vedas. Like the Vedas, they convey knowledge of the absolute truth. And to do so, they must be transcendental like the Vedas. Right? That's the point. Because, as we mentioned, every syllable, every word has some particular special meaning. And all the different aspects of understanding of all everything within the creation and beyond is defined in those Vedic verses. Right, so the Puranas make it accessible by making it, explaining it and everything. So everything's not so terse like that. Does that make sense? So the Upanishads have the same problem. Because here, the Upanishads are also included when we mean Veda. They're quite terse, and one word means so much. You know, he was going, and he saw a lady, you know, how you say, making cloth with black and white thread. You know? So that's what it'll say. And he saw, you know, I'd say, six boys turning this large wheel with 12 spokes. Right? What does it mean? A lady, I think his name's Vidata, she's making this cloth, black and white threads are night and day. Right? The six boys are the six seasons. The wheel is the Kala Chakra, the 12 months, that's the spokes. You know, so this is how Upanishads work. Right? That makes sense.
The Sita, that one?
Yeah. That'll be in the Samhita. Like that. But yeah, they deal like that. It's all very, very terse, is the terse and cryptic. Like the Vedas, they convey the knowledge of the absolute truth. To do so, they must be transcendental, like the Vedas. Otherwise, they can't do that. But at the same time, to provide the Vedic nature of the Itihasas, To prove the Vedic nature of the Itihasas and Puranas, he gives the example of completing a golden bracelet. If a golden bracelet is incomplete, it can be completed by gold and not by lead. In other words, the metal which will complete the bracelet must be gold. They're available and not difficult. They give us access to understandings of ancient wisdom that would otherwise be untraceable. Similarly, if the Itihasas and Puranas complete the Vedas, then they must be Vedic in nature. The Skanda Purana 4.9.5.12 indicates the equal transcendental status of the Puranas, Itihasas, and Vedas as follows. In the Vedas, Ramayana, Puranas, and Mahabharata, Lord Hari is glorified everywhere in the beginning, middle, and end. The conclusion is that because the Itihasas and Puranas emanate from the same source as the four Vedas and have the same purport, they are also equally authoritative, so much so that the Upanishads call them the fifth Veda. Mm-hmm. Next, Srila Jiva Goswami explains more about how the Itihasas and Puranas are not inferior to the Vedas. Text 13. Oh, it's almost done. Okay. So here's Lord Hari is glorified everywhere in the beginning, middle, and end. So that's the basic principle. It's all about Hari. Now, that one verse, Skanda Purana is 100,000 verses. Right? And the Acharyas don't quote that many verses from Skanda Purana. Like that. You see them. Skanda and Linga, I don't know. I've just seen about three or four like that. You know, maybe there's a few more, but still a handful compared to how many are there. Right? So that's the point, is that it's only, even the Puranas make it more accessible. It's going to have to be shown that Bhagavatam in each verse proves this point. So that's why it's the considered the superior. That'll come.
Is there a point that this verse is quoted here? Or that this Skanda Purana verse is quoted? I mean, or is it just, it's a nice verse?
I didn't quite
If you say that, we say that in Bhagavatam, this is basically the purport of all the verses. So is this drawn out because just it just kind of fits in with the context?
No, because it establishes the point.
Yeah.
Right? Good, because you're trying to establish that the Puranas are equivalent with the Vedas.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you do that, then you're going to show amongst Puranas then how Bhagavatam is the best. Does that make sense? So it's step by step.
Yes.
Does this have a connection with that verse Prabhupada quotes in the intro to Bhagavatam? He says that this literature, even though irregularly composed, you know, has the power to create a revolution in the impious, you know, civilization.
I got that means you have to look exactly, but I get the idea that it's more the Bhagavatam itself, but he's talking about that discussions of the Bhagavatam in the association of the individuals, you know, interested persons, that discussion may not be so exact or perfect in its composition, but because it's about the Supreme, it will have that effect. The chit potency is working. Like that. Because the Bhagavatam, you know, is not necessarily irregularly composed, you know, like that. Oh, that's there, yeah. Also, it's like like I mentioned, it uses 500 different chandras, you know, verse combinations. And then he uses, also goes between actual shlokas and then prose. So you have a lot of things that you wouldn't find necessarily in other literatures. Generally, if something's picked like a Ramayana, that uses one verse structure for the whole thing. Like that, it doesn't use anything else. You know, Gita only uses two. Like that. So generally, so for one to use 500, that's, you know, quite a lot. Okay, so thank you.
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada. Jai 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 Jai